Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 145 for June 2nd, 2008, Deadly Sins. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for TWiT, ladies and gentlemen, and a very big shoe today. It's a revision, all revision 3 show. I'm Leo Laporte, and joining us for the first time ever, I don't know how, in 145 episodes, we've never had him on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jim Louderback, the CEO of Revision 3.
It's great to be. I can't tell you how excited I am to be here. It's awesome.
Oh, I apologize profusely for never getting you on. I don't know how. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I think because you're a CEO, I don't want to have a CEO on the show.
I was just living vicariously through Patrick's experiences.
Well, what's the excuse for never having me on the show then, Leo?
Wait a minute.
I'm not a CEO.
Is that Martin's? How did you get into my system? Martin Sargent.
What was Carmine Gallo unavailable this weekend? So you called me.
I think that's it. Marty is the one of the stars of Revision 3, revision3.com, of internet superstar. Do you still do WebDrifter? Is that in hiatus?
WebDrifter is on hiatus right now. We're going to start WebDrifting again in the fall. Love everyone to check. That's actually my favorite show I've ever done. Revision3.com/WebDrifter. Travel around the country. Go behind the website of the craziest websites out there.
I guess check you can't out. Do that all the time because it takes a lot of travel.
It is. It's really intensive, but it's super fun. Check it out.
Wait a minute. Carmine Gallo's on Skype here. Wait, oh, no. I'm sorry. That must have been a wrong number.
I do know how to get in touch with Carmine Gallo if you'd like him on.
I think we all do.
He's in my shed right now.
Also here, another star from Revision 3, Mr. Patrick Norton of Techzilla and System fame. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Leo.
And an original TWiT going back to day one. By the way, I want to correct you, Marty. You have been on TWiT before. You know you have.
I know, but I don't think it really counted.
It counted.
I showed up at the Podcast Expo, and I said my piece for about 20 seconds, which was probably more time than I'll get in this conversation, too. But it was fun. We did it. It was a huge panel down at the podcast. And I came the wrong week, remember?
You did.
I showed up a week before, and I'm
funny.
In the parking lot. It's completely empty.
It's really
down
funny.
In Ontario?
Yeah.
That's how excited I was to be on TWiT.
He drove all the way from L.A. to Ontario. There's nobody there. I felt for you, Marty. I really did. No, you know, the reason I haven't invited you, per se, and I guess it's somewhat true of Jim, is I try to kind of, it's mostly working press kind of, you know, it's a news, tech news stuff. So, and by the way, and I get lazy, and you know, it's Dvorak. So John couldn't make it this week. I thought, what the heck? Now, in the chat room, by the way, and if you've not watched or TWiT Live before, we do this live now at twitlive.tv, and we have two chat rooms. We have a StickAm chat room, which is full of people. It's 500 people in there. And we also have a chat room at irc.dslextreme.com. There is room there. That chat room is #TechLive, and you can join us there. And Xarian's in that chat room. He says, wait a minute. It's not an all Revision 3 show. You're not Revision 3, Leo. And I guess that's true. So
coming over.
You will be someday.
We'd like to make an announcement. No, I'm not going to make an announcement. You know what I was
really?
Go ahead.
I get a favor to ask for you and Marty.
Yes.
I've gotten like 125 emails asking about, quote, the feud.
It worked, Marty.
Now, I know
yeah,
you
why
were
don't,
on
why don't you talk
Internet
about the
superstar.
Feud, Leo?
It worked, Marty. It all started. There's never been a, I'm going to tell you right now, there's never been a feud between me and Marty. In fact, I adore Marty. I think you know that, Marty.
Yes, Leo.
And
yes,
maybe a little too much. But the what happened is on TWiT, I made a joke, and it's a bad old joke I've made many times about a restraining order. And I thought, God, everybody's right. Going to know that's a joke. Except Marty sends me an email saying, "What did you do? Put seagull poop in my food at the ramp? What did you do?
I have no idea what you're talking about. All of a sudden, I start getting all these emails, all these message board postings about some awful incident that happened at the ramp. which caused you to never speak with me again. Or I put a restraining order on you. I didn't know what was going on.
It was a joke.
I took it really personally, and because I thought that you and I were always BFFs.
Absolutely BFFs.
And now we are again, and I'm really looking forward to our cottage that we're going to share up in Mendocino next week, and I'm glad that we're back together.
twin beds or double? Oh, I'm sorry. Already, I could see Patrick turning red.
Bearskin rug in front of the fire.
By the way, guys, if you just had a bad acid flashback, especially you, Jim, I said tech live. I meant pound twit live. Please.
I was going to say something about that, Leo, and I was like, boy, you're taking an old name and re-bringing it back.
Please do not confuse the two.
But if you call it tech live, I'm going to have to fire everybody.
You know, tell me if this is true, Jim. This was Tech Live was really the beginning of the end of Tech TV. I mean, everybody.
From my potential. So what happened is, Paul Allen bought us, world's worst investor, and Paul thinks everybody in the world is just like him.
Right.
So he did that thing. Remember the Voodoo PC? It was a little handheld PC that ran Vista that cost like $3,000. Well,
he was competing with OQO. He wanted to do an OQO.
No, he wanted one for himself and built. And rather than building three, he built a whole company.
Right.
He only sold three to himself.
Right.
The same thing with ZDTV. Tech TV said, I want 10 hours a day of tech and financial information on my TV. So I have something to watch during the day when I'm in the office, because obviously he had nothing else to do. So he funded that. And then when he decided he lost interest. And
here's the amazing thing. And Greg Drebin, our vice president of programming at the time, told me this much later. He said, of course, we spent $1 million to get Tech Live running, which was kind of the kiss of death. The idea was to do a 9-hour news block with a staff that had never done anything more than Sunrise Semester, and they spent, I think, was it, am I wrong, Jim? Didn't it spend $1 million on that set? Close to it.
We spent a lot of money on the set. We had, I think, I must have hired 120, 130 people,
include Carolyn.
Yeah. Well, Greg was like, "Yeah, you want to run it?" I'm like, "Yeah, okay. I've never done anything like this before, but I'm sure going to learn a lot."
Nobody had done anything like that before.
Do you think that if it wasn't for Tech Live, Tech TV would still be around?
Probably not.
You know what the thing about Tech Live though was, Martin, is it was a distraction. You know, when you do anything, there's that, you know, the opportunity cost of not doing something else.
Right.
The fact that we didn't do, you know, let's take Leo and put Leo on for 8 hours, we would have, you know, that would have been it.
Well, guess what I'm doing right now?
Well, duh.
Isn't that the funny thing is what comes around? I mean, so I'm having dinner with Greg in New York City, and who was the other guy? Oh, the Ed Badawano. Ed Obed Padawana.
Ed Capuano.
Love Ed.
Who is now, by the way, working in Seattle for Zoom.
I saw that. That cracks me up. But he's there as a consultant, I'm sure.
No, he's an employee.
No.
And he's in the creative side, helping the whole Zoom thing grow up. Yes, and he loves it.
Well, no wonder it looks like an acid trip. So Ed Capuano and Greg Drebin and I are in New York City at one of these Argentinian sword restaurants. You know, what do they call them? Chiaroscuros? The ones
where
they skewer the meat. And they bring meat on a sword to your table. And we're eating there, a lot of meat, big time meat. And Drebin says, get this, 1 week into Tech Live, Paul Allen calls me and says, cancel it. 1 week in, he spent millions of dollars, hired 100 people, brought people out from the East Coast, promised them, lifetime jobs virtually.
Yeah.
1 week in, Paul Allen says, I don't like it. So Drebin, now of course, remember Greg may have been inflating his role here, but he said no. I talked him down. I said, please give us a few months. But that's basically all. How long did Tech Live last?
9 months? 10 months?
Yes. Yeah,
they should have canceled it after the first week.
Maybe Paul was right.
It ended up being, when you looked at the financials, for that year, it ended up being, not counting the stuff that was hidden in some of the other operating and studio expenses, about a $70 million.
You're kidding, really?
Wow. No.
Was our run rate 50 to 100 million a year, something like that?
Yeah, it was. We ended up, one of the things that was so expensive about Tech Live, remember, we set up a studio in Seattle, a studio in New York.
Oh, that's right.
Fiber lines.
We had Stacy do. Oh, we had people all over the country. That's right.
We had fiber lines connecting them together.
Plus all the incredible monthly expenses for the NASDAQ. Those NASDAQ, like the NASDAQ big board access and all that stuff.
You know,
it was a It was literally, Leo, when you looked at it, there was a pig in the snake around all of the expenses. If you looked at it, if the financials across 4 years were a snake, there was a giant pig in the snake that year.
The irony is, here I am sitting in this studio that I put together for just a few $1,000s, streaming live for free over the internet, using Skype to do exactly those same kind of satellite things. And in fact, it works just as well. And, you know, I hate to say it, but even with 5,000 people, I may have a bigger audience.
And probably about the same amount of revenue.
Exactly.
Well, the fiber itself is expensive, but you know what? It is very reliable. Remember when they made, you know, they turned Silicon Spin into Charlie Rose? And John Dvorak had to interview everybody over the satellite?
Yeah, but this cracked me up. Yeah, everything was satellite except that if somebody wasn't on the satellite, they'd put him on a stool in the corner.
Another room.
It was the same studio. John could see them. They were sitting on a stool with a separate camera in background to make it look like. And then they wouldn't show the two of them together. They'd put them in a picture-in-picture. So it's like, yeah, via satellite from the other side of the room.
Hey, man, it's all about maintaining the magic. Don't be giving away those secrets.
I know. Well, there's
you're
a statue.
You're going to be using those secrets in your studio.
Yeah, but I'll admit to it. In fact, you know what would be really fun is to have a picture-in-picture of a guy on a stool and then cut to the guy in the stool.
Just pant to him.
Just walk over and say, wait a minute, no, you're something's wrong. I might do that. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to turn this into a reminiscing show, but I couldn't help it. I really couldn't help it. This is it's so much fun to get you guys on.
I didn't see any of you guys at the Tech TV 10-year reunion last week.
Hey, tell us about that, because May 11th, 1998 was when we launched. I think it was Dave Chung who got this thing together?
Yeah, of course it was Dave Chung. It was Dave Chung. Dave Chung really misses those Tech TV days quite a bit, I think.
Well, he got a lot of free tequila from me, I can tell you that.
Hey, man, it was fun. Remember the park side where we used to go?
Yeah.
We had it over at the park
side. Did the tamale lady come by?
Tamale lady was not there, unfortunately. But, you know, there's about 50 people there. Saw some old friends. So, yeah, it was kind of nice.
I'm sorry I missed that. I was doing the show.
I got to say, I didn't even know about it. So the information, you know, you must not have wanted me there. So
you're not on the mailing list?
You got to be on the mailing list, Jim.
Well, I don't even know what the mailing list is. No one invited me to the mailing
list. Chris Perillo.
You have been on the mailing list. And actually, I never got that final time for the on that one.
It was on my Davis email. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah, I tried to get you on the show and you said, I don't ever look at that email. Oh, it's on your Ziff Davis email.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Here.
So how long have you now been at Revision 3, Jim?
Almost a year.
Wow. And so your title there is CEO. That means you're the big honcho.
Yeah, I have a board that I have to report to, but yeah.
And does Kevin Rose ever, you know, come over and say, Jim, this Tech Live thing's not going to work. I think we should fire everybody.
After a week. No, Kevin's on the board, so Kevin's pretty involved in helping us think about programming and what we do and what we don't do.
His portfolio is more dig, though, right? I mean, he's...
Yeah. I mean, he and Jay Adelson, who both started Revision 3, are definitely, you know, they're very much on Dig. Because you think about Dig, Dig's up to, what, 26, 27 million unique visitors a month?
That's insane.
That's out of control.
Yeah, yeah. No, obviously, you know, they feel like that's their knitting. They got to stick to that. But I think, I know Jay very much believes in IPTV and believes that the future, and maybe the real future of the company is Revision 3.
I believe that, absolutely.
Yeah. So, does Jay come over and tell you what to do sometimes?
Yeah, well, Jay is chairman of the board, so he definitely is. You know, it's funny. You think CEO, oh, yeah, CEO, you can do whatever you want. No, you've got this board of five people who beat you up every month. So,
plus, you know. Jay lives in New York.
Oh, really?
He keeps to come out here. What, is he out here about once a month, Jim?
Oh, I thought he was out more often.
Well, he's out here 2 weeks a month.
But Martin's in his shed. He doesn't know. Martin misses all the visits from the bigwigs. Who else is on the board, Jim?
It's two of the guys from Greylock, David Z and James Slavitt. Greylock put $8 million of venture funding into the company.
And so, what are you doing with all that money?
Spending it on Martin's salary, Patrick's salary, building a studio.
All went into the shed.
We're doing it to expand beyond, you know, basically, I mean, that's a flip answer, but basically to expand beyond Dig Nation and a couple of the other shows that we had when the money came in.
So Dig Nation is Revision 3, and it's currently the big show on Revision 3.
Actually, that's not really true. Dig Nation, if you look at number of videos delivered per month, Techzilla, Patrick's show, Patrick and Veronica, has surpassed Dig Nation.
Congratulations!
Thank you.
That's awesome, Pat. I'm not surprised. That's fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that.
And where does Internet Superstar fall into that, Jim?
Internet Superstar is among a couple of shows that we've launched that are our rising stars. So what we're doing with those shows...
rising stars. I like that. I like that.
And building an audience for them. So it's like... I got an MBA, so I'll do some boring financial stuff. But it's portfolio analysis. You have your shows that are really big and that are drawing a real big audience. And then you have your shows that have great potential, and you launch them and nurture them. And at some point, they either break through and become really big, or you say, well, maybe this isn't working. Let's think about reworking this or trying something different.
I've never been able to cancel a single show. See, that's my problem. They're all my babies.
You got to eat your dead.
I can't do it.
But no, like Martin's show, Web Drifter, was huge. But again, like you said, you can't do it every week. Right. So that's why it makes a lot of sense to bring it back in the fall for a second running.
Right, right. So let's start talking now about the big story of the week, which is frankly about Revision 3. And it was the amazing story of the denial of service attack. And I first became aware of this, Patrick, when you tweeted on Twitter, help, we need a network expert. We're being DDoSed.
Is that what I said?
Something like that. I'll have to go back and look at the archives, but it was something like that, wasn't it?
No, we were looking for somebody at a specific DNS routing facility to see if anybody happened to have a contact there.
So this must have been very early on before you had any idea what was going on.
Yeah, actually, Roger Chang couldn't log into we couldn't access a bunch of services. And Roger emailed me about that on my personal account. So I had the home addresses for a couple of the people and emailed them. And it went from, oh, that's weird, to, oh, something seems to be weird with our DNS, to, oh, my God.
Right, right. Well, I have it actually right here. I'll put it up for you so you can see it. It says, Revision 3 is under a major DDoS attack. Repost for Jeff Rizzo. Anyone know something at United Layer whose ass I can kick into helping us out? That's the exact phrase.
Yeah, I mean, it started happening on Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, which, you know, everybody was gone.
Ugh, it always is that way. So it was a week ago. It was last Saturday. And what was happening?
So there are a certain type of packet called a SYN packet. When one machine on the internet wants to connect to another, they send this short little message that says SYN out, and the other machine that you're trying to contact sends an ACK back, an acknowledge back. And if that connection happens, then they open up a connection and they communicate and send bigger packets with more information. There were a bunch of computers out there on the net that were just flooding us with these SYN packets, and we were getting about 8,000 an hour. It wasn't a huge amount of bandwidth, but our network infrastructure was unable to deal with 8,000 of those an hour.
That's enough. 8,000, not a minute. Now, I had seen 8,000 a minute, so it was 8,000 an hour.
No, I was second. I'm sorry.
Second. Yeah, okay. I was going to say 8,000 an hour. That's not too bad.
No, 8,000 a second.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is a traditional SYN flood. It's exactly what brought down Yahoo 5-6 years ago. Normally what you would do if it's coming from the same IP address is block it. So obviously this was coming from a variety of IP addresses.
Yeah, there are a wide range of different IP addresses, but as it turns out, we tracked them all back to a single company.
Now tell us about that.
So we tracked it back to this company, Artist Direct, and so we knew that they were coming from there. We knew what
all of them were coming from the same company.
Well, about 90%, and we so about 7,000 a second, and we knew that who their ISP was. So we tried to get these guys on the phone, but it was a Memorial Day weekend, and nobody called us back.
Right. You say in your article, which, by the way, I highly recommend people read this. It was on the Revision 3 blog. You say that this company not only didn't hide, as you would normally hide it with a DDoS attack, they didn't hide the source. They announced it. They said, hey, look at us. We're attacking you.
Well, yeah, they didn't spoof the, usually you spoof the IP address that it comes from. You know, you don't want people to know. Or you know, you have some shadowy IP address from Romania or something. But these guys are like, no, you just looked it up and it was right there on the table, and it was Artist Direct.
Well, who's behind Artist Direct?
So by the time we eventually got to their ISP, we found out that the machines was a division of Artist Direct called Media Defender, and this is where the plot thickens, as they say, because Media Defender, their job is to, they work with large copyright holders like the Warner Brothers and you know, people who have, do movies. And what they do is they protect their copyrights basically on torrent-based networks by, well, they're basically creating spoof files. So imagine you've got the Indiana Jones movie, right? And then somebody creates a torrent of it and it's out there. They'll create 1,000 versions of the Indiana Jones movie, but and put them and see them through the torrent network, but they're all just full of garbage.
So in effect, you're trying to get Indiana Jones. What you get is a seed that's worthless.
Right, exactly. It's kind of looking for the needle in the haystack at that point. And so their job is to use these aggressive means to promote copyright holders. And one of the tricks in their arsenal, as I found when I did some research, I was looking at a story from Ars Technica, was that, you know, they also include denial of service attacks as one of the weapons in their cache of weapons that they go after people who are violating copyrights.
They say on their webpage, we use a range of non-invasive technological countermeasures like decoy and spoofing. They have a leak alert service. They don't mention the fact that they might be doing DOS attacks.
Yeah, I mean, that was in the Ars Technica story. There was another group that really was got mad at them at one point and tried to shut them down or do something, and apparently they put a denial of service attack out against them too. So these sort of sin flood denial of service attacks are not unknown by this company. So here's what happened was we had a torrent tracker. A torrent tracker is basically a way to figure out who's got copies of torrent files and how you kind of find your torrent file out there in the ecosystem. We post all of our shows via BitTorrent. We have been since Kevin started the company with System back in 2005.
I remember that. We used to do that too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and we've been doing it for a long time. They apparently have been using our tracker off and on when it's been available to put their spoofs out. And,
whoa, wait a minute. So they have to use people's BitTorrent trackers to do the spoofing. And you're
right.
Saying they use yours?
They don't have to. They take advantage of open tracking system. Whoa. They don't have to. And I'm certain they host their own tracking systems to basically...
if people start to say, oh, well, hey, if it comes from these IP addresses, it's Media Defender, ignore it. They need to use other open tracking systems. I can see
right,
that.
Exactly. So our tracker, you know, and I look back into this, our real network head guy started in April of 2006. And from April 2006 to April 2007, our tracker server was had a whitelist. Basically, it wouldn't respond unless you were asking for one of our shows. You know, had the file hash that was one of the hashes that it knew about.
Right.
But the server had been crashing all over the place. So we moved over to another. We were using the BitTorrent server written in Python. It basically couldn't handle white lists over about 1,000 or so
right.
shows. We got that many and more.
Right.
So we moved over to another piece of software. And to try and see if it would be stable, we left it open. So we did not have a list. So that was for about 5 weeks. So what that meant is that since we'd had a tracker for a long time, the name of our tracker was out there, and as people created torrents over time, it became one of the 40 or so that you can put into a torrent file, and a lot of people used it, even though it wasn't responding. It was on that list of torrent of trackers at one point that you could use. So once we opened it back up again, our index started really, and we unknown to us, our index started growing, and we had lots and lots of torrents that we were tracking.
Not just from Media Defender, but from a lot of other people, I would imagine.
Lots of other people, too. Yeah, and this is like a search engine. So basically, we were, you know, tracking...
You didn't have bad stuff on there, but just like Pirate Bay, we would have had links to torrents.
We were linking to things and showing where you could find it and what PCs were hosting it and things like
so
that.
Presumably, this is something, if you had known about, you wouldn't have wanted to have.
Yeah. It was not... It's certainly not something that we as a company would want to do.
Right.
And it turns out a guy in our forums noticed it. And put a forum message up and said, guys, did you know that your tracker's open now?
Oh boy.
And my CTO was on vacation for 2 weeks in Italy.
When was that he said that?
It was sometime like sort of like 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago. We opened it up the first week of April, and it was probably sometime in mid-May and so the minute that my CTO got back, like the next day, which was the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, we put the whitelist back in effect. Right after we put that whitelist in, we started getting the sin flood. And we thought it was a bunch of, you know, rogue torrent folks from some shadowy Eastern European country. So we're like, you know, something sort of pissed at us. turns out, no, it was this legit business, Media Defender, that, and I think they just couldn't conceive of the fact that somebody would use BitTorrent for legitimate reasons. And the minute that we shut ourselves down to them, as far as I can tell, it appears they just flooded us with SIM packets.
Now, they claim that you had 296,000 illegal, what do they call them? Seeds. You weren't holding the files, but you had the meta files for those.
Well, we had that. What the tracker does is it tracks which computers actually hold pieces of that file. So, over time, since we've been running a torrent tracker since, I'm sure, 2005 or 2006, and I'm sure it was open for a long time.
Doesn't take long to fill it up with that. So you don't contest that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Probably not. I mean, it's the thing about it is, though, a torrent file. So the way torrents work is you have a torrent file. The dot torrent contains the hash file of the unique identifier of it. And then it contains a list of tracking servers, up to 40 tracking servers.
Right.
When you create a torrent, you can actually put anything in there you want. Like I could put, tracker.twit.tv in there if I wanted to.
Right. That's why I don't run BitTorrent trackers anymore, by the way.
You can put, tracker.whitehouse.gov if you wanted to. Some of the software will actually go out and check and see if the tracker's online. And,
right.
Some of them will include a list of ones that were known at one point. So I fully think, and, I'm just conjecturing at this point, because prior to April of 2006, it was basically three guys in an apartment in L.A. and nobody really remembers anything.
because they were...
that's an exercise to the listener, but...
they literally don't remember anything.
So,
Martin, you were probably there once in a while, too.
I was there. I stopped by for a couple parties, yeah.
I don't remember. I might have. I don't remember. Yeah.
But I think this should happen to us like once a month. We've gotten a tremendous amount of press out of
it. It's been very good for
it. Yeah.
So Media Defender says, hey, these guys have illegal torrent files. Not, again, as you said, Jim, not the file itself, but just the metadata, the torrent.torrent file, just like Pirate Bay.
Wait.
You didn't even have those? You were just tracking where they were.
We were just maintaining an index of IP addresses and other locations on the net.
Oh, so you didn't have any torrent files on you?
No. We had no torrents.
Oh.
It was just so the torrents live in one place. So, for example, when you want to download a Revision 3 program on BitTorrent, you go to revision3.com, you go to Techzilla, you see the beautiful face of Patrick and Veronica. Over on the right is an ability for you to download the .torrent file.
Right.
You download that off of our, basically, I don't know, probably, I think it's off of our web server.
Right.
Which is...
Yeah, they're small. They're tiny files.
Little things. You download that, you put it into your torrent program, whether it's Azarius or whatever, and it says, oh, you want Techzilla episode 134.
Right.
Well, here's the unique ID, and here's a list of trackers that I can go to. The number one, and maybe the only one when we created, I don't know exactly how we created, is tracker.revision3.com. So it sends the hash to tracker.revision3.com. Tracker.revision3.com says, I know about that file. I know that this location has it, which is probably our CDN. I know that viewer A, B, C, da, 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 all these different viewers have it. And at that point, Azurius will go out to all those and say, are you guys up? Are you awake? Can I have pieces of the file? Let's put it together. That's a probably somewhat imperfect view of how it works. But we just ran the tracking server that would track where all these little pieces of things were stored, much like on a search engine when you go into a search engine and search for Leo Laporte. Google caches stuff and Leo Laporte, and then they'll give you all those links where you can.
Yeah, but what was happening with your tracker? Was that any different than what Pirate Bay does? I mean, Pirate Bay says we don't carry any files. We don't have. We just point to where the torrents live.
Well, Pirate Bay will let you download the torrents from them as well as
host torrents. And you say because you're not hosting the torrents, it's a different thing.
Well, even if you hosted the torrents aren't the actual files.
Well, that's what Pirate Bay's defense is. It hasn't worked for them, unfortunately. But
yeah, but in our case,
the reason this is relevant is because this is what Media Defender is saying is, hey, look, we weren't attacking Revision 3, but they're tracking a bunch of copyrighted movies.
So we had a tracker up for 5 weeks that I'm sure built up a big index of lots of different files and stuff out there because people found out it was open and started using it. Couple things, though. First of all, if Media Defender knew that it was open, rather than using it to inject their fake torrents into the ecosystem, why didn't they pick up the phone call and say, hey, you guys, you know, your tracker's open and it's probably not a good idea because of this, this, and this. And, you know, you're tracking some copyrighted stuff and people are paying us to protect it. Could you please lock it down or shut it down? And we would have been, just like when somebody posted to our forum a message that said that same thing, we would have, you know, quickly sprung into action and put our whitelist into place.
Well, they would have been doing you a favor. Now, well, they said your tracker had been open for years, though. This is, well, I'm quoting Randy Saff, who's the CEO of Media Defense.
And this is getting back to, I think we probably had an open tracker that up until April of 2006, and nobody knows. But from April 2006 till April 2007, we had a whitelist in place. We were only tracking our own shows, and that's why it crashed every week.
Right. Right. So Randy Saff said, we saw an open BitTorrent tracker with a lot of pirated content on it. We'd been posting fake files to their tracker. They changed their configuration over Memorial Day, and that triggered the sin flood. What did you do?
We shut them out. We re-implemented our whitelist 5 weeks later, which basically said, tracker.revision3.com will only respond when somebody sends me a hash file, a unique identifier for a Revision 3 show that's basically on this.
You did the right thing.
Right. We did the right thing, and we got punished for it.
Now, was this an automatic thing from Media Defender? I mean, is this their servers doing some automatic...
I think so, because
autonomic.
The minute we told them, you know, when we finally got in touch with them Tuesday morning, 3 days later, they were like, oh, and they basically shut it down in about an hour and a half.
Right. So you're going to sue them?
No, I don't think so. That's what Steve Gilmore asked me that on email, and Steve's like, you should sue them. Like, you know, we're a little company, and, it, you know, when you get into a lawsuit like that, it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, and, you know, I think our losses could probably be calculated in the tens of thousands, maybe 100,000, but I might send them an invoice, though.
That's not a bad idea. So what was the loss to you? Where did the losses come from?
Well, it came from, so our biggest shows, Techzilla and Dignation, launch on Friday. Starting about midday Saturday, our viewers were unable to download them.
That's not good.
Our website wasn't available. We do about 4 million page views a month, so that's about 400,000 page views. Figure 10% of the month it was down. So we weren't able to serve our shows and our advertising, and there's some goodwill there too, but I think we've kind of gotten over that.
It ruined my weekend. All I wanted to do was watch Patrick on Techzilla all Memorial Day weekend, and then this happened.
Shot the hell. What'd you do instead, Martin? I mean...
I watched some old screensavers tape.
There you go. That's almost as good.
Jim, what's going on with the FBI involvement now? Are they past this now? Are they still investigating? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we work with a couple of different networking companies. You know, United Layer is our ISP, and somebody contacted the FBI on our behalf, and the FBI sounded like they were interested and said, okay, here's what you do if you want to pursue it. You know, go here, fill out just make a claim and put it in. So I did that. I got a call back from the FBI, and they said they'd look into it. We'll see what happens.
Is it illegal?
What's that?
Is what they're doing illegal?
I don't know if it's illegal, but it's certainly immoral. I mean, don't shoot first and ask questions later. Give me a call. If it's a problem, tell me about it.
I'm pretty sure, Leo, if I did it to say, yeah, you know, insert name of giant company, yeah, here, it would be illegal in my ass.
There you go. There you go. Let's put it that way. If you were the high school dropouts that took over Comcast for a couple of hours, would you go to jail? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think this is, they DDoSed you.
Yes, they did.
Some debate over whether we call it a DOS attack or a DDoS attack.
Well, because Media Defender runs thousands of servers or hundreds of servers.
It might as well be DDoS.
It's definitely a distributed denial of service attack, because they distributed it across multiple machines.
Right. If it had been from one IP address, you just would have turned it off.
Right. Exactly.
I think it's illegal. I think that is a denial of service attack. I don't see how you can say it's not illegal. And I think if the FBI says, hey, Mr. Lauterbach, you want to press charges?
Well, I will say yes.
Hell yeah.
Figure it out. Here's the thing. I just think that, you know, we're in the business of providing information and entertainment. If people can't get Marty or Patrick over the Memorial Day weekend, it's not life or death, except maybe to them.
Thanks, Jeff.
What if this was a hospital, or what if it was an airport that was using BitTorrent to distribute high bandwidth versions of the approach path, and suddenly people couldn't get access to it? The entire airport or hospital was brought down because somebody set up a bit flip that it would do a SYN flood if something happened. That, I think, is wrong.
Now, here's a question. Is what you were doing, is running an open BitTorrent tracker, is that illegal in any way?
Not at all.
No.
I mean, it's basically, I mean, was it, you know, should we have left it up like in that state for 5 weeks? You know what? Probably not. We were trying to see
you could claim that that's negligent or, you know, dumb, but it's not illegal.
Not illegal. And the minute, you know, once we were told by one of our people on the forum, we shut it down. And we got, and these guys came after us because we shut it. It was kind of like, well, if you won't let us play on your tracker server, we're just going to take you down.
Here's the real story. The record companies in this country, the motion picture companies in this country, are completely out of control. But because they give Congress so much money, they're never going to get called on the carpet for this kind of thing. And it's appalling.
Well, the other thing I think that the other side of it is this is another one of the battles between new media and old media that we're seeing play out. Old media.
You think it's because you're new media?
Hear me out. Old media can't imagine that somebody would use something like BitTorrent to give access to video files that they own.
You couldn't possibly have been using this legitimately.
Right. Old media is all about walled gardens and controlled access and DRM and, you know, we own the experience. We own you.
Right.
And we're all about, you know, what the viewers of today want is they want to control the entire experience. They want to watch it anywhere, anytime, any device, any service. And that is completely anathema to any old media company. And these guys, who are basically in the pocket of old media companies, can't imagine that somebody would use BitTorrent for a legitimate purpose. If they're using BitTorrent, they're a criminal.
Right, right. I think you're exactly right. And it's not that they don't like it that you're new media. I mean, they don't feel threatened by new media in the least, but it's just that they don't get it.
Right, it's the culture clash. It's two trains running into each other. You think about the writer's strike as an example of this. This is, I think, the upcoming. You know, there's a SAG strike that may well happen by the end of June or end of July. The Screen Actors Guild over the same things that the writer's strike were under.
Right.
This battle between the old way of doing business and the new way. And we talked about this at the beginning. I mean, Leo, right now you're running a media empire that is bigger than tech TV ever was.
Out of my closet. I love it.
Out of your closet. Doing more than we did with millions and millions.
That's amazing.
Wait, is that true?
Which part? The closet or tech
TV? Leo's bigger than tech TV ever was.
It's very nice. I'll take it, but it's not true.
But if you think about
it. I'm even more thrilled to be
I'll give you. You know what, Jim? You tell me, because you probably knew better than I did. We have 500,000 unique listeners a month. We have 4.5 million downloads a month. I mean, I don't know. You compare that. What was the screensavers, Patrick, I think at our peak, and I think we were the number one show ever, was 250,000 people watched an episode, something like that.
Something like that.
So, I mean, screensavers probably had more than 500,000 viewers. Maybe not.
Patrick, isn't it true that when you and I were hosting it, we got the highest ratings ever?
Oh, don't
the
say that.
Single month, actually. No, well, just...
That's what you always told me.
All right, wait a minute. It's breaking up. I'm losing this. What?
That was also the month where you had like 4 million people watching you write at home for a month.
This is when I was out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was hysterical.
Was it really? Was the best rating? It was better than when I was on the show? Was when you and Marty were on the show?
It was partially the timing, and partially it was... I think that was also right before Marty and... Basically, it was before they stole everybody to launch Marty's shows and to move Morgan over to X-Play.
I'm still hurt.
Who did they steal from my show?
You.
They stole you to start
you,
your show.
Paul Block. Yeah, Paul Block. You can have
remember?
Him.
I mean, you went from being, you know, full-time working for us to full-time doing the...
Anyway, the point is that at its peak, probably Tech TV, I don't know, how many unique viewers a month did it have? It probably didn't have more than 500,000, let's be honest with you.
Yeah, I think...
We're within an order of magnitude of what Tech TV was for about 1/1,000th of the cost, maybe 1/100,000th of the cost.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's technology. I mean, that's not me, it's technology.
Well, it's technology, it's delivery, but, you are doing the same things... in your, you know, basement or your closet that we were doing at Tech TV.
Right.
It's just that you're able to do it for far less. And
no Kenny Rogers interviews.
No, it wasn't Kenny Rogers. It was the members of his band, if you recall.
Yeah. That was I think, for me, the final straw.
At least they actually watched the show.
But then, no. We led off a Screensavers episode with the Kenny Rogers interview. I mean, a long one, a 7-minute interview with Kenny Rogers, the entire tech content of which was he owned an iPod. and I'm not kidding. And that's exactly when that's when Tech TV basically self-destructed. It was like, okay, we give up. We might as well bring in girls in a trampoline because this isn't happening.
Do you think that was worse than the Alan Thicke interview? Yes.
The Alan Thicke interview was right up there. Did you do that one, Marty?
You did that one.
You got six, you and I, but mostly you got stuck with a lot of these celebrities.
I had to go down. Yeah, I was doing all the bit chats, so I had to go down to the junkets down in Hollywood and do.
Awful.
Boy, that was tough. You see these movies, and you have to come up with these tech angles to interview these people. Wow.
So let me just put a little context in here. One of the problems that happened, and this is an old media problem, is that we were a cable network. And when you're a cable network and you get Nielsen rated, what happens is that you have to dumb down because no longer can you sell the composition of your audience.
Exactly.
You're selling a share. You're selling a rating point. And the way you got more rating points was not love you, Leo, not Leo Laporte, but the Thunderbirds.
I completely agree with you. No. And from day one, I asked the question, why are we building a brick and mortar business when the future is really on the internet?
So, but that's the beauty of what you're doing and what we're doing at Revision 3, is we can appeal to narrower audiences. We can bring them together, and they're extremely valuable. Our under 35-year-old audience has abandoned traditional media. Their composition is great. We can sell the value of that audience till the cows come home. And we don't have to worry about dumbing stuff down to appeal to 30 million people.
Right, I agree. And I think that's the real strength of it. So, Marty, to answer your question, neither Revision 3 nor, maybe Revision 3, but I'll say Twit isn't as big as Tech TV was, but it doesn't matter because our overhead is much less and there's no pressure on us to change it.
Right.
So let me raise another story, which I think is quite an interesting story, and it's got my hackles as upset as this Media Defender story, and this is the new ACTA provisions that the United States is attempting to get other countries to adopt. Canada would be the first. The premise is that when you go into Canada bearing an iPod or a laptop, well, right now, if you go in bearing a laptop, they do random searches of your laptop looking for child porn. These new
I brought this up 2 weeks ago, and nobody wanted to talk about it. 2 or 3 weeks
on Twit?
Yeah.
What did we say?
I said, is anybody upset? Is anybody picking up on this, the whole basically that you have to give up your password for any encrypted data on your computer at a border check and you have no recourse?
Well, now it's worse. Yeah. Now what they're proposing is that if you have an iPod, they can go through you don't need to give up your password. They can look at what's on your iPod or any other device.
If you have encrypted files on your computer,
then they have to ask for your password. We did the story with the guy, and the courts, by the way, in the U.S. ruled the guy did not have to give up his password. And that was, I thought, a very good ruling. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but that doesn't seem to be the way it's working out at the border crossings right now.
Well, these are these new ACTA rules. The idea is that if you have an iPod, if you have any device that can contain media, laptop, iPod, DVD player, if you have DVDs, the border guards can look at anything that you've got and in their own sole discretion, not at the request of a copyright holder or anything, but just in their sole discretion, determine that what you have is pirated, confiscate it, destroy it, and fine you. So if you come into the country and you've got an iPod full of music and they decide, oh, wait a minute, you couldn't possibly own that album, they can take your iPod. They can fine you.
People are going from here into Canada or also the
Well,
way around?
Eventually it'll go in every direction. This is essentially what, once again, this is the Motion Picture Association and the RIAA trying to change laws around the world to support them in their fight against, piracy.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about something that you have as an American citizen who pays taxes, you want to get pissed off. The fact that we're using Border Patrol agents to take a look for pirated material.
That's ridiculous.
You know what? The whole terrorist thing, I'm over that. You know what? Smuggling, I'm over that. Let's be looking out for the pirated MP3s. That's a great use of American of Border Patrol. It just pisses me off.
This is from the Vancouver Sun. The federal government... They're talking about the Canadian federal government is secretly negotiating an agreement to revamp international copyright laws which would make the information on Canadian iPods, laptop computers, or other personal electronic devices illegal and greatly increase the difficulty of traveling with such devices. It could also impose strict regulations on internet service providers, forcing them to hand over customer information, underscore this, without a court order. It's called the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement. It's coming from the U.S. They're trying to pressure Canada and other members of the European Union as well to create an international coalition against copyright infringement. You hit the nail on the head, Patrick. Instead of worrying about terrorism, let's worry about who's stealing Prince's latest song.
Of course, if I'm a major label, I probably feel that piracy is a form of, because I mean, I think they've said that actually. If corporations, if basically, you know, if the Supreme Court decided that a corporation has all of the legal entitlements of an individual, ergo, a corporation suffering is as important as an individual American citizen suffering, ergo, having their, you know, lifeline to profit being cut isn't that, you know, it's just like,
well, forget due process. Yeah, we need better lobbyists for American citizens.
Oh, wait, Congressman.
So what happens if Patrick crosses the border and he's got an illegal copy of Pootie Tang on his laptop? What happens to him at the border?
Well, how are you determining that it's an illicit copy of...
Well, if they determine that it is somehow?
And cracked it and you put it on your hard drive, that's not allowed, right? You crack the encryption.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you have a commercial movie... You know, it's funny. Yesterday on the radio show, guy calls up. This kind of broke my heart. His wife is undergoing chemo. He has 300 DVDs he's purchased legally. He wants to put some of those movies on the iPod so she can watch while she's in the chemo chair, which is, I think, about as noble a reason to do this and seems to me completely legitimate. So I explained how to use Handbrake to do it. He said, but okay, and I'm not violating any copyright rules when I do this, am I? And I said, yes, you are. As a matter of fact, it's a federal offense. And I said, but I don't think it should be. But let me point out to you, I'm duty bound to say, yes, you're violating the DMCA by ripping these DVDs. I'll tell you how to do it because I think it's a bad law, but it's not legal.
Well, and your alternative is to go try and buy them via iTunes.
Well, and that's what I said. I said, you know, the movie industry would say, but you know, you could buy them on iTunes, except that I already bought it.
Right, exactly. That's the fundamental problem of it's my media. I want to watch it anywhere, on anything, any device, anytime.
Jim, Leo, you bought a license to use that video in the DVD format in a designated DVD player. You did not buy that movie. Yeah. You bought the rights to view that movie in that particular format. I don't understand why you people want to watch stuff when you want to watch it, where you want to watch it.
I got an interesting email from a guy who said, hey, you know, you're going to get knocked. The FCC is going to pull you off the air because you're advocating illegal activities. And I said, if that's the case, so be it. But, you know, I am not going to shut up on this one. I'm sorry. This is wrong.
For you, Leo.
Well, I mean, I'm willing to risk that. I've got 5,000 people who watch me on video, on streaming internet video. I don't know. I feel like I'm working in your mom's shed, actually.
Well, that would be a really interesting, I mean, do you want to talk about a wonderful opportunity to spend, you know, chasing something up to the Supreme Court? How does the FCC, you know, if you curse, the FCC has a clear, mandate to slap you on the wrist. If you have a wardrobe failure on broadcast TV, if you curse on your AM radio show, you know what I mean? It would be interesting to watch them trying to
be advocating an illegal act, right?
Yeah, the problem is you could have a really fun – this is when you get into a – really, and it's already obviously been shut down in some legal avenues. But potentially, this is a – you know, is this a First Amendment versus the DMCA situation?
It's going to be very interesting.
What the DMCA basically says is you have no First Amendment rights when it comes to violating copy protection.
Well, I'm sure they're going to subpoena this recording, so we'll let them decide. Will you guys come to my trial?
Oh, yeah. I'll be an expert witness.
Marty, conjugal visits, okay with you?
I will be a fairly unexpert witness, but I'll be there.
I wasn't asking that, but that's okay. I'll take it. All right. I'm giving you a hard time, Marty.
Free Leo Laporte. I can see the
Free Leo Laporte. Hey, we did it for Adrian Lamo. do it for me. Supreme Court on Tuesday dashed the hopes of T-Mobile and AT&T. I just love beginning a story that way. They were trying to stave off a class action lawsuit saying your policies against unlocking mobile phones are illegal. The Supreme Court declined to review a decision by the California Supreme Court that said that lawsuit's okay. And millions of California customers can sue T-Mobile and AT&T. There are similar lawsuits against Verizon and Sprint. In fact, Verizon and Sprint have agreed to provide unlocking codes after your contract is over. I think that's a huge movement forward.
And that's pretty reasonable.
That's not much to ask, right? Since,
because they're essentially subsidizing the cost of the hardware, so they should be able to get something.
Yeah, but that tell that to T-Mobile and AT&T, who literally fought it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, of course they're going to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court. They want you to buy more hardware, not less. I mean, so, and they don't want to benefit their competitors.
One interesting upshot of this might be an unlocked iPhone.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, 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 bum.
Except you won't be able to... Can you actually use the... What happens if you're using an iPhone on T-Mobile with the... what happens to the visual display of your voicemail message?
You lose that because that's a T-Mobile specific feature. But I was using an iPhone on T-Mobile for a while, and it works except for that. And the push email from Yahoo doesn't work the same, but you could still get it working. Except for that. YouTube, you had to do a little hack. But, I mean, basically, it's the same phone.
So it's the same thing except for the cool integrated features that really make the iPhone a magnificent product.
Not so. I mean, visual voicemail is great, but it's not. Do you use an iPhone, Patrick?
Yes.
Do you think visual voicemail is a selling point?
For me, it absolutely is. Visual voicemail is a selling point. The integration with the integration with Google Maps actually is incredibly useful.
Yeah, but every phone does that. My BlackBerry does that. Mm-hmm. And my BlackBerry will allow me to use a GPS dongle to get even more accurate maps. I mean,
I've actually been pleasantly surprised with how accurate the GPS is on the iPhone.
Well, it can only be accurate to the distance to the cell site, right?
It triangulates across multiple cell sites. I mean, I've even been in the middle of nowhere and had pretty good luck with it. It's been more accurate than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Some cell phones actually have GPS chips built in,
right.
I guess.
I
know Verizon's doing it with GPS chips.
Yeah, I decided instead of doing that because there isn't in fact a BlackBerry. I have the 8320. The 8310 has a GPS chip, but it used to kill my N95's battery life. So I use just a key fob that's a very good GPS Surf 3 chipset GPS device. And the BlackBerry sees it via Bluetooth. So and Google Maps sees it automatically. So
and Bluetooth doesn't kill your battery life.
Not like GPS does.
Good to know.
Oh, no. Oh, come on. People use Bluetooth all the time on their headsets.
No, I just...
Wi-Fi will kill it. We'll see what Edge does when... HSCPA does when the new iPhone comes out. There is rumor that they'll have GPS in the new iPhone.
Yeah. Strong rumor.
It makes sense. You guys think there'll be anything besides a new iPhone announced June 9th at WWDC? No.
They're definitely guilty. I mean, he's got more stuff up his sleeve.
You know what the story is now, the big story is, and we'll save this for Mac Break Weekly because I can tell you guys couldn't care less. they're going to replace .Mac or rename .Mac. Are you ready for the name? Have you heard this yet, Patrick?
No, I'm afraid.
This sounds like something out of Redmond. Mobile Me.
Oh, no.
Isn't that the worst?
I like the Nintendo Me.
Oh, it should be. Mobile Me.
Maybe they're teaming with Nintendo.
Maybe. I think that the iPhone is very much like the Nintendo Wiimote,
It is, actually.
Same idea. It's got the accelerators in it.
The two companies are more alike than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one here without an iPhone?
What's up?
Am I the only one in this conversation that does not have an iPhone?
I don't have an iPhone, Martin.
Good, Jim.
I can't imagine Jim every... Jim's still using his Scion 3A, I believe.
I can't allow myself to get a decent phone. I have such a crippling internet addiction as it is. I can't let myself go out of the house and be able to surf the internet.
That's true. So you have a phone that has big buttons on it and big numbers?
No, it's terrible. It's like one of those old Nokia 6120s.
Like a candy bar phone.
Yeah, it's like...
Jim, do you still use... What was that thing that you used? It was the
HP 200LX.
That's right.
If I could get Outlook integration on the HP 200LX, I would still use it.
You would... I mean, that thing danced for you. That was the first time I ever really saw somebody that actually made a PDA do anything they wanted.
I could type 40 words a minute with my thumbs.
It was amazing. It was completely out of control.
Now I just... Actually, what I do is I've got EVDO built into my Dell 1330 and... I use OneNote, which actually, you can bitch about Microsoft.
Oh, I love OneNote.
OneNote is a great product.
You got to try Evernote, though. Have you tried Evernote?
I have not.
Evernote is a OneNote clone that now has migrated to the cloud, which makes it very interesting.
Well, that's cool.
So I use it on my Mac, on my Windows, but it also works on my iPhone. It works anywhere I can get to a browser. It's very interesting. It's not so much handwriting. They do have handwriting on if you have a tablet. But it's less handwriting.
Tablets suck. I carried one for about 8 months.
So you use a keyboard?
Yeah, I use a keyboard.
Oh, yeah, you'll like it if you like OneNote. This is Evernote. It's you can get a beta invite to the beta pretty easily, I think. You probably know some people. I don't know.
Cool. Anyway, so yeah, I'm big on keyboards. I would like a phone that has a keyboard that's exactly the same as the $200. This is what I want you to do on system, Patrick. I have two $200Xs. Can you take a Windows mobile device or a RIM and stuff it into the $200LX so I can still use the $200LX keyboard? That would be an ideal hack for me. I'm like Paul Allen. Nobody else wants that but me.
But that's all that matters. It was the famous audience of one.
I just want to get a Bluetooth keyboard to work with an iPhone.
Bluetooth keyboard iPhone. They don't work? I guess they don't, no. We're going to take a break, come back in just a bit and talk about the teenagers who, the high school dropouts who hacked Comcast. But first, a word from our sponsor, Audible.com. Folks, you know about Audible. It's the place to go to get your, I got to put my Audible.com Chiron up here. Hey,
hold on a second. The color corrections look a little off.
Let's move that lower third. Oh, that's good. That's beautiful. Audible.com/twit, the place to go to get your Audible books. Audible is frankly what saved my life driving back and forth to Tech Live. If it hadn't been for those Aubrey Maturin seafaring books to take my mind off the pain, I probably would have pulled my car right off the Golden Gate Bridge. So thank you, Audible. 8 years of life-saving audiobooks. It is a great way to pass the time. You know, we're doing a podcast with a woman named Roz Savage, who's rowing across the ocean. She rowed across the Atlantic solo by herself in a rowboat 2 years ago. She's now, isn't that crazy? She's hardcore. You would love this woman, Patrick. She is so hardcore. So now she wants to be the first woman to solo row across the Pacific. She left on Memorial Day weekend. So she's been rowing for a week. I talked to her 3 times a week via sat phone. But before she left, with Audible's permission, I gave her my iPod full of 323 Audible books. But then what I didn't count on is the fact that she was rowing 15 hours a day.
Right.
Within 2 days, she'd read Bleak House, the Dickens work that's like 1,000 pages. I'm thinking, oh my God, I should have given her more books. She's read the entire Discworld series. I'm not kidding you. She said,
"Why Bleak House of all the things to read when you come across the Atlantic?"
I know, isn't that funny? She loves. Well, she majored, I think, in Victorian literature at Oxford, so she actually likes this stuff.
Plus, it probably makes you feel better about the fact that you're duct taped to a pair of oars for 15 hours at a pop.
Can you imagine?
At least I'm not a 6-year-old in a workhouse.
I know, it could be worse.
In 1873 or whatever.
It could be smoke in the air, and I could be turning a wheel making wool.
I could be making matchsticks in the sulfur eating
please,
out my lower jaw.
Can I have some more? So we're going to talk to Roz again next Tuesday. I'll find out what book she's reading right now, but she's going through. Any of you guys, I actually sent an email out asking if any of you guys had an Audible pick, because if you don't, I can give you, I have tons of them, but I just wanted to give you.
Have we done, crud.
Give me a hint.
Spook Country?
Neil Gaiman? Oh, no, that's Stephen King.
No, it would be William Gibson. Actually, you know what? I just reread.
We did. Yeah, I did mention that, actually. Yes.
How about Anansi Boys from Neil Gaiman?
Isn't Anansi Boys great?
Yeah. Or American Gods would be. I'm sure we've done that one.
I have. Neil Gaiman, we had him on the Screensavers, didn't we?
Yeah.
He did a little drawing of the Sandman on the back wall. Was that him?
Yes.
You know, I wish we had that back wall. Whatever happened to that?
It went to the jobbers and probably was thrown into the dumpsters with all the other smaller stuff they didn't know how to sell.
Sad.
For 6 years, we'd have people who came on the show autograph the back wall of the set, including Neil Gaiman, and he drew the Sandman. Ugh, kills me. Anyway, yes, you can listen. Let's not get depressed. You can listen to Anansi Boys and many other wonderful. In fact, you know what would be a great start? He has a. You can get this for free. It's 7 minutes of Neil talking about Anansi Boys and how he got the idea for it. You can get that for free at audible.com, and then you'll want to listen to the full Anansi Boys. It is amazing. It is a. I love Neil Gaiman.
Leo, I want to put in a plug because you mentioned the Discworld series. If you don't know the Discworld,
you're right.
Oh my God, they are so. This guy, Terry Pratchett,
yeah,
one of the most creative writers. he could be writing in any genre, and you would just want to read every single one of his like 10,000 books he's written. It's not
I agree with you. I love his stuff. They have almost they have 41 Terry Pratchett books. 41. I think it's got to be every one of them, including the entire Discworld series, which is 30 books itself.
He's a master storyteller, so give that one a try. One of those a try.
Small Gods is a good one. Let me play a little bit of this. This is Nigel Planer, who is... they have the greatest British names. This is Terry Pratchett. This is from the Discworld series. This is Small Gods.
...books in which the events of the past are pinned like so many butterflies to a cork. These are the books from which history is derived. There are more than 20,000 of them. Each one is 10 feet high, bound in lead... and the letters are so small that they have to be read with a magnifying glass. When people say, it is written here. There are fewer metaphors around than people think. Every month, the abbot and two senior monks go into the cave where the books are kept. It used to be the duty of the abbot alone, but two other reliable monks were included after the unfortunate case of the 59th abbot, who made $1 million in small bets before his fellow monks caught up with him.
It's full of jokes like that. It is so much fun. Thank you. You're absolutely right, Jim. I don't think we've ever recommended Terry Pratchett, and I really would like to recommend him right now. A great choice. We've got lots of good books, 45,000 of them, and any one of them could be yours free if you go to audible.com. It should be twit.com/audible, but we haven't worked that out yet. audible.com/twit. And we are coming up on our 1-year anniversary with Audible. And I don't want to hurt your feelings, Jim and Martin, but the regular twits, I've been told, will all be getting free Audible accounts. So, Patrick, you will be getting a free Audible account.
Woohoo!
If you're allowed to accept that.
I believe I am. Jim, can you make a ruling on that?
Yeah, you can accept it.
I pay for mine, but I've arranged, because Dvorak kept bitching that he didn't have one. So Audible said, "Well, come on, we're going to give anybody who wants any of the twits, the regular twits, we'll give you." Patrick, you'll get an email and it'll be all set up for you. So,
cool.
And Jim, if you just come on, Jim and Marty, if you just come on more often, we can get that for you too.
Okay.
Can I share yours,
Patrick, please?
Only if you row across the Pacific.
As long as it's not a violation of the DMCA.
I think it probably is.
Tell you what, Leo, for you, I'm going into Canada next weekend. Maybe I'll bring it up.
After I heard that story, I said, I am so glad I no longer do a TV show. I used to go to Canada every month, and I'm thinking, I don't want to get my stuff searched. Not that I have anything on there, but that's a real invasion. Anyway, Audible, we'll get to that in a later. Audible.com/twit. Thanks so much for their support for the past year of the Twit Network. We really, really are so happy to be a part of the Audible team. You're going to Canada next week. What for, Jim?
There is a conference in Banff called the Next Media Conference.
Oh, that's right, a great conference.
Yeah, and it's right before the big Banff TV Festival or whatever it is.
Yes.
So I'm going up there. They asked me to speak there, and I said, yeah, I'll speak there. Then I noticed it was over a weekend, and I said, ooh, and I'm going to go with my wife and my son.
Uh-huh. And you stay in a great hotel. Like Amber did that last year, and it's one of the most fun times she's ever had.
I'm looking forward to it, and my wife and my son have never been to Canada, so I think it'll be great.
Oh, you're going
to
love it. Canada is a beautiful, and Banff is the most beautiful place in the world, practically.
I used to go to, I went to college right near Montreal. I went to Montreal
you
all
did?
The time. Yeah, University of Vermont.
Oh, it was in Vermont, though.
Yeah, but it was right next to Montreal. Montreal was an hour away.
You're kidding.
And back then, you didn't have to take your iPod over the border.
And Martin grew up an hour from Toronto.
That's right. Well, more about 3 hours. I guess across the lake, it would have been an hour.
Yeah, it's just across the lake, but you had to kind of drive.
Yeah, I would just get my Nicholas Nickleby and row across.
Watch out for the Niagara Falls on your left. It's a real doozy. When I first started going to Toronto, you gave me the recommendation for a pizza restaurant. It was the greatest.
That good?
What's the name of that? Do you remember?
I can't remember the name of it.
I ended up staying down the street from it. It's on Queen Street.
I know that hotel you stayed in. A very cool place.
Well, the funny thing is, when you used to go there, it was a flop house. So I was kind of surprised you knew the name. they had renovated it. It's funny because I said, oh, yeah, I'm staying at the Drake on Queen Street.
That's it.
And I was with John Donaby, the radio guy I used to do a show with in Canada, said, The Drake, that's like a flop house. I said, well, I think they've renovated it since you were there last, John. But Drake is a very hip hotel now, and it's just down the street from this Italian restaurant, which is, I can't think of the name.
Oh, well.
So let's move on. There are a couple more stories before we wrap this up. I was going to talk about these teenagers, these high school dropouts who hacked Comcast. And they said, hey, man, we tried to tell them. They took over the Comcast homepage, modified it for 4 hours. I don't know. Should we not be glorifying them?
I don't think what they did was right.
No, it wasn't right, but
I don't think we should glorify. Although I did love the quote. There was a quote in a CNET story about the guy. One of the guys said, you know, because they knew they were going to be arrested. It was like, I slept in my clothes because the last time they came, I was in my underwear with my hanging out.
There's also a great picture from his Facebook of him and some sort of smoking apparatus. I don't really recognize what that is.
You wouldn't know what that was called.
No, I don't know what that is. But I mean, just shows you anybody can be hacked. We got hacked a couple of weeks ago. They deleted all the contents of our forums, and with a stupid hack. I mean, it's my fault. I was a brain dead, but I still have the script, the hacker script. He left it on my system, so I think, you know, be nice to me, because I know how to use it. I have a script, and I'm not afraid to use it. Actually what I am going to do on one of these Twit Live
episodes.
Make
sure you sleep in your clothes. Leo,
yeah, really.
You're hanging out with the cops.
You can't. I wear a nightshirt, so you don't really have that problem.
With a little stocking cap?
Yeah.
It's very Dickens of
you. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cute. If you fly out of San Jose, Jim Ladderback, good news. You're going to have free Wi-Fi in the San Jose airport now, ad-supported.
You know, that's only for you people who have Macs, because I have EVDO on my computer.
Oh, you don't care. Hey, I can use EVDO on a Mac.
Yeah, but you can't get it built in, though.
I can use mobile Wii. Can you use mobile Wii?
That sounds like something you do in the bathroom, Leo.
I love this story. Microsoft is saying, don't use Safari. It's not safe. This must really make Microsoft. This must just make them feel so good.
I'm just surprised that Microsoft found a flaw in a browser without somebody else telling them first.
Good point. Well, they didn't, actually. The truth is...
I also hate Safari. Let me come out on any platform.
I use Firefox and Flock, but Safari's fine. I kind of resented Apple's pushing it on us on the Windows side. But apparently there's a flaw that... By the way, Apple does not acknowledge this as a flaw. This is another one of those, it's a feature things, or... They say if you want to turn that off, you have to make a feature request. Security researchers found out that Safari could be prompted to automatically download resources from a web page, as many as the web page wanted. They call it a carpet bombing attack, because all of a sudden your desktop or your downloads folder will be filled with hundreds of little tiny files, executable files, I might add. You know, just in case you were worried about it. Apple says, we know about it. We're make a feature request. It might take us a little time to fix it. So Microsoft's response is, the Microsoft security team says, stop using Safari and pending an investigation. This must have really made Microsoft so happy. We're going to investigate that.
They're trying to deflect attention from Vista.
Where do you stand on that? I know you're a big Windows user, Jim. Where do you stand on? Are you using Vista or are you still with XP?
I've got Vista on. I've got two machines in front of me. Vista's running on both of it. And I've thought about going back to XP, but there are some features about Vista that I really do like.
Yeah, we're learning that Vista is actually safer, very safe. In fact, I just read that the UAC, the user access control in Vista, prevents a lot of rootkit infections. So it's pretty effective.
Actually some security analysts would debate that with you. I got to say, the Service Pack 1 made Vista so much more functional.
Really? You noticed the difference?
It seemed so at first, but over time it started to really kind of clean up a lot of my issues with it.
Yeah, I disagree. Service Pack 1 did nothing for me. My problems with my machines not going to sleep, my problems with kind of eventually they sort of... Here's the thing about Vista.
You've got EVDO in your notebook.
When you load it up, you get it exactly the way you want. Create a ghost copy or some copy of it, so that after about 6 months, you just go back to it, and all of a sudden, your machine's running faster, and you're happy again.
Which is a lot like Windows XP, Windows 98, and it's Windows even more XP, which I personally refuse to run.
It's more pronounced in Vista, Patrick. And so really, Microsoft, really? In the next version of Vista or whatever, needs a big button. It needs the big go back 6 months button.
They do have, I have to say, one of the things I like most about Vista is that revert to previous version of document button, which I think is quite a good thing. That's something I'd love to have on a Mac. I mean, you can use Time Machine, but it's a little bit of a bigger gun to solve the same problem. I really like that. I think Vista's great. I'm using Vista on two out of my three, the three machines in front of me. And I think it's fine. I've been very happy with it. It puzzles me that there's been so much criticism of it. I guess, you know, even Bill Gates at the D conference said, hey, we make mistakes. Vista, what did he say? He had a very nice phrase. Vista gave us, he said, we have a corporate culture that we fix mistakes. You know, we find them and we fix them. And Vista gave us an unusual opportunity to exercise that corporate culture.
That's awesome.
Bill's getting a little loose now that he's got 1 month left. He's relaxing a little bit. Did you go to D, Jim Lauterbach?
I did not. Wasn't invited, and actually, you know, didn't even think about it until it was too late anyway.
Yeah. It was in L.A., right? It was out here.
It's in Carlsbad or something like that.
Yeah,
like
some weird place, yeah.
You didn't go, did you?
No. I have finally found the way not to go to conferences, doing this 25 hours of programming a week.
Day, yeah.
You know why? Because now I find somebody who's going to the conference and we just have them call us on Skype and it's just like being there. I'm going to be the Anderson Cooper of tech. I'm just going to sit my butt in this chair all day and let you guys all go out and do the work.
You don't like traveling, do you, Leo?
I love traveling for travel's sake. I hate business travel. Don't you?
I still like business travel.
I mean, if I were going to Banff, okay. But,
hey,
but
I'm going to New York tomorrow. I'm going to Iowa in 2 weeks.
No, see, sorry. What are you going to Iowa for?
Iowa.
GoDaddy.
GoDaddy's in Iowa?
Yeah, they're in Arizona and Iowa. And apparently the people we're meeting are in Iowa. I went to Iowa once for Chris Perillo's conference. And I was.
We were at that conference together.
I was excited to be in Des Moines.
GnomeDex. That was actually a fun event.
It was fun.
But now he has it in Seattle or wherever he lives.
I think it's Seattle.
Yeah. So here's one for you, Marty. I picked stories for you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. What do you got?
NYU student invents virtual girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah. So
yeah, I read about this kid.
He's a graduate student, Drew Barrows. Doesn't have a girlfriend right now. Hasn't had one in some time, apparently. So he built a mattress that has a virtual, like, movie of a girl. She lies there quietly until you sit or lie down. Then she responds to your every move. Lie on your back. She snuggles up right next to you in a log position.
But it's like 2D. It's like snuggling with a magazine.
You can't, not even a magazine. You can't even feel her.
The kid's whole excuse for not having a girlfriend is he has no time to have a girlfriend. But he's got enough time to build a virtual woman in his dorm room.
Yeah. And especially, I mean, talk about, you know, at the risk of sounding like a pig. NYU is a target-rich environment. There are a lot of beautiful, smart, ugly, fat, round. I mean, anything you're interested in. NYU is a huge campus. It's in the middle of Manhattan. They basically own the village from the west side to the east side. I mean, get out, dude. Talk to people. Start dating.
Maybe he was threatened. You know? Maybe it's a little scary for him. Maybe he'd like to stay home and kind of get used to it. It's okay.
Maybe it's not so bad.
It's not so bad having a 2D girlfriend.
You got to see the picture. It's the perfect use of Microsoft Surface.
It looks like Surface. I wonder if she responds to touch.
She's probably machine washing.
Suddenly I feel dirty.
Spread your fingers and she grows. All right, here's another story for you, Marty.
There's a pinch in her face involved.
The guy who designed the Pringles can passed away recently. He's 89 years old. He worked at Procter & Gamble. Dr. Frederick J. Bauer. He did many, many things. He was a food technician. In fact, we can thank him for freeze-dried ice cream. We can thank him for frying oils. But his proudest accomplishment, according to his daughter, the invention of the Pringles can.
He's proud of it.
He received a package, a patent for the package in 1970. I know you and Patrick have built antennas with the Pringles can. So Dr. Frederick J. Bauer was buried last week in a Pringles can.
You know, the Pringles can save me there. They didn't really save me, but I have a lot of crime in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And there's always people breaking into my cars. So what I did was I took a Pringles can and I left all the top of the Pringles up there. But then I put some dog do in the bottom because I knew that the guy was going to go in there again. They always stealing my stuff. So I knew that he reached down. And when he got down to the bottom of the Pringles, he was going to find my little treat for him.
Did you really do that?
I did. So I want to thank Dr. Frederick J. Bauer for that.
You really did that?
I did that, Leo. And I'll do it again.
Just in case anybody finds any Pringles lying around. Wait a minute. You didn't do that at the ramp, did you?
No.
Okay.
No, that was bird.
I thought that last Pringle was a little weird. So he was obviously cremated, or you couldn't bury him in a Pringle. It wasn't like a giant 6 foot
Actually,
Pringles can.
He was. If part of him was buried in a Pringles can, the rest in another container.
Thank you for that correction, Patrick. Lest anybody think he was a weirdo or anything.
What part? Who invented a reconstitutable freeze-dried ice cream. The whole point of that freeze-dried ice cream he invented was so that you would add milk and put it in the freezer and create ice, like basically create.
Oh, it wasn't astronaut ice cream?
No.
Because I love that stuff.
Ugh.
No, no, that's good. You don't like astronaut ice cream?
Not even a little bit.
I told Roz, you know, because she has to, you know, carry a lot of freeze-dried food in her rowboat, but you don't have a lot of, you can't, you know, bring bananas or anything. And she'd never heard of freeze-dried ice cream, and I think she ran out and got some for the trip.
To REI.
Yeah, you think I made a mistake? She's going to be upset at me now.
Look, if I'm in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, I'm thinking freeze-dried, or the Pacific for that matter, freeze-dried ice cream is going to be great. If I've got a Safeway
that's
quarter
true.
Mile from my house,
there you
I'm
go.
Really not going for the freeze-dried
She didn't have
ice
the
cream.
Choice, really, yeah.
That stuff's disgusting. The freeze. That's probably why the bathroom in the space station went out last week.
They brought a new pooper up, though.
A Russian pooper.
Well, the Russian pooper failed. Now they have a Japanese one, right?
Does it do the whole thing?
Well, the problem is there's a fan. Okay, so the deal is, I don't know if I should get into this. Is anybody eating lunch right now?
There's a fan.
You know the problem with having a live video feed with a number on it? You can watch that number go down. It doesn't just go up, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the people eating lunch.
So there's no gravity on this International Space Station. So in order to, you know, kind of keep things in their place, there's a fan on the toilet that's drawing, you know, that sucks down into the toilet. The Russian fan crapped out, so to speak. And, I mean, imagine this. There were floating turds in the space station. They had to use nets to catch them. So they very much need this space shuttle launch. This is an important launch. This is you know, vital.
No, it was just tragic. They had Soyuz module that they had to use that, and then they filled that one up. Oh. And now they're having to use these Apollo-era, like, bags with sticky tape on them.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's
And, you know, they're up there for, like, 6 months. This is non-trivial.
Get those guys out of space. They're embarrassing themselves. What are we doing up there?
I got another story. When you bring back Internet Drifter, Web Drifter, I got another story for you. I want you to go see Don Bowman of Columbus, Ohio. Don is retired now, 57 years old, was an auto liquidator. He's made a business out of buying domain names that he thinks are going to become big, you know, possibly, you know, big political or cultural events. He watches TV, thinks of a domain name, and he probably goes to GoDaddy, Jim, and registers it using the GoDaddy code. What is the GoDaddy code, Jim?
Star 1.
Texzilla 1.
No, Star 1.
You guys fight it out. G-Brief.
Star 1.
I don't have a GoDaddy code or I'd get in this fight.
This is the guy who registered, was it HillaryObama.com?
Obama Hillary. Now, not Obama Clinton, by the way. He couldn't get Obama Clinton, I guess. He got Obama Hillary.
It's up on eBay right now. The auction went live today. No bids yet, but $5,000 is the starting price.
No wonder no bids. Would you buy it? Obama Hillary? I think it should be Obama Clinton. Obama Hillary. What about Barack Hillary? He also owns such great sites as RenoForGovernor.com, Bob Graham for President.com, Joe Lieberman for President.com, and oh, here's a big one, BloombergPowell.com. This guy does not have very good political sense. He's hoping to make millions on ObamaHillary.com. I don't think so. So it's not. There's no bids yet, huh?
Nah,
it's amazing how
before.
Much money domain squatters make or domain. I don't know what the polite term for domain
squatters.
That's
the name, is. Domain squatters. That's what they are. The one just sold recently for a lot of money. What was it? I'm trying to think. Sex.com was famous for getting $1 million, but there was another one just recently sold. Got a big box. CNET was so stupid. They bought a bunch of these one, like news.com and download.com.
TV.com.
And then they realized these are too generic. They're not worth anything.
Yeah, they're just worth $1.8 billion, 40%
yeah, right.
stock price. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how that was. I think that was pretty smart.
Was that a smart deal for CBS or no?
Oh, for CBS? No. Stupid.
Good deal for CNET.
Awesome for them.
What was wrong with that for from CBS's point of view?
I just think there's no overlap. I mean, it's you've right. got something really narrow on technology, and they said, oh, yeah, it's got chow.com and you know all these other. How many people go to chow.com?
Chow? C-H-O-W?
Yeah.
Oh, that's valuable.
Do you go
no,
there?
No, I never even heard of it.
Chow or Chow Hound?
Chow Hound, sorry.
Big deal. Even TV.com, which seems like a good idea, and actually is a beautiful site, I don't think anybody knows about it. Maybe they do.
They will after they run a few interstitials on various.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm thrilled. I own 100 shares of CNET stock, so.
I sold mine after Zif, because we owned some, right? Because of Zif Davis or something.
Mm-hmm.
I got rid of it when it was like $4.
Yeah, you did better than I did, Leo.
I wish I
wrote it all the way down.
You know, I was the third employee at CNET, and I was supposed to get equity, but Halsey he got tired of me. He fired my ass. It's a long, strange trip. That's when I went to Zif Davis. And
look at you now.
Look at me now.
Commander of your own media
empire. My own closet. All right, I'm going to get out of the closet. I want to thank Jim Latterback for being for his popping his cherry on Twit here. Really appreciate your coming in, Jim.
It's my pleasure. Let me know anytime.
Did we ever break 5,000? We didn't. We did? We got over 5,000 viewers. All right, it's a new record for Twit Live, and thanks to you. I'm sure it's because of you, Jim. Or could it be because of you, Martin Sargent?
I believe so.
Jim Latterback is the CEO of Revision 3, revision3.com. Of course, Martin Sargent, one of the stars there with Internet Superstar and the soon-to-return web drifter as soon as the injunction is lifted. See, that's a joke. See, and I say that, it's a joke.
I laughed.
Yeah, thank you.
I am so glad that we're good friends again, Leo.
I forgive you the Pringles thing. I didn't expect that. I have to say, I was really surprised when I got to the bottom of that. Jeez.
So to speak.
I thought it was chocolate. I didn't know. I thought it was a little extra gift. What did I know?
I never even got to plug my Twitter. Twitter.com/Martin Sargent.
S-A-R-G-E-N-T. He doesn't spell it like the Frenchies.
And I'm Twitter.com/JLouderB, J-L-O-U-D-E-R-B, which is the, you remember back at the 8.3 character days, Leo?
Yes.
Yeah, so my email was always first letter of
That's
first
right.
name, first seven letters of last name, so it's just been that forever. So
it's funny because it resonated with me. I was trying to remember your Twitter name. Actually, I was trying to remember something else, but I won't say what it is. I was trying to remember your Twitter name, and then it kind of came out of me naturally, and I remember that. That's so funny.
Actually, just during this show, I went over 3,000. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We can get you. Look, I got Dvorak from 0 to 10,000 in literally a week or two. We'll get you up there.
Can I do mine?
Yes.
Twitter.com/Patrick Norton.
Patrick Norton. And we're not going to even mention Dvorak. Ha, ha, ha. Watch Techzilla, now the number one show on Revision 3. I'm so proud of you and Veronica, Patrick. I could just die.
Thank you. That's Techzilla.com, T-E-K-Z-I-L-L-A.
I'm
sorry,
awesome
I'm having
show.
A Dvorak moment.
For our Canadian listeners, that's T-E-K-Z-I-L-L-A.com. I have to translate for the Canadians. And I thank you all for being here. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can. Well, I could actually, what I could do, if I had four T1s or four DSLs, I could have four computers, one attached to each, and then each computer could have its own Skype, and then I could do it.
Right, what I need is four T1 lines, three Krays, and a small sack of MIT graduates.
The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.